A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, on a silver tray, a printed card reads, a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer silver anniversary picture. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. A title, Challenge to Lassie, copyright 1949, with Edmund Gwenn as John Trail, Donald Crisp as Jock Gray, Geraldine Brooks as Susan Brown, and Lassie as herself. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Justin Soule and Christopher Flowers, read by Pat Lentz. Screenplay by William Ludwig, based on the novel Greyfriars Bobby by Eleanor Atkinson. Produced by Robert Sisk, directed by Richard Thorpe. A herd of sheep moves across a field near a seashore. A few hundred feet away, a rock as big as a house juts from the ocean. Now, a rocky plateau rises from the center of a sprawling city. In the foreground, a fortified wall stretches behind a medieval castle and an obelisk. Taller buildings rise along the city's perimeter, and smoke billows from two factory towers. Words appear.
Edinburgh, 1860. A towering over all, Castle Rock, with much of its military history lost in the dimness of time. But now another kind of history was being made, as each night its sunset bugle sounded. History of a dog's loyalty and devotion. This devotion led to troubles which greatly upset the dog, and upset the city so thoroughly that matters finally reached the high courts.
But if you deliberately sought to embarrass this court in your native city, you will succeed.
I assure you, Sir Charles, it is not our custom to waste time on so trivial a matter.
It's not trivial to the dog.
To plead this case is a farce which can only shame us.
Just because Lassie hasn't the gift of speech, is she to be denied a hearing?
Mr. Trail, you are verging upon contempt of court.
But even a condemned criminal may speak from the scaffold, and I will speak for Lassie until the story is told, and her death is a shame for all of us. But contempt or not, I will be heard.
The white-mustached provost turns to his fellow magistrates on either side.
State your case, Mr. Trail.
I thank your lordship. 'Twas, little more than a year ago, on a market day, in the grass market, here in Edinburgh.
Now at the base of the massive Castle Rock, townspeople crowd the streets of Edinburgh. Several men peruse livestock from behind a roped corral. Nearby, a man in a blood-smeared apron hands coins to another man with white mutton chops.
There's your silver, and there's your sheep. Will you be bringing more next week? I can't tell. They're McFarlane's sheep. If he takes my advice, he'll sell no more this year.
Then I'll not be seeing you till the spring.
Well, that's as McFarlane says.
But he never went against your advice.
And he never made a mistake either.
Good day.
As the sheep merchant walks down the cobblestone street, dressed in his tam cap and plaid blue scarf, a white and tan collie puppy runs past, followed by a curly-haired terrier. The puppy hides between some produce baskets and sneaks behind a bushel of turnips just as the barking terrier approaches. The puppy keeps its head held low against the ground as the terrier passes in front and circles the area again. The sheep merchant watches from the street as the collie darts away. The terrier notices and sets off after it, running into an alley. The sheep merchant runs over as the terrier corners the puppy inside a hollow crate.
Here, Joey, hold it there. Hold it. Come on.
The sheep merchant shoos the terrier away. He picks up the downy-haired puppy.
Well, now, fine mess you got yourself into. You're hardly old enough to know better.
The puppy licks him.
Here now. Mind your manners.
What's all the racket, John?
A blacksmith calls him over.
Well, here's a lady got mixed up in a fight.
You needn't worry about her. Edinburgh's overrun with dogs.
Yeah, but not like this one. Look at her lines. Look at her coloring. She's a champion collie.
Do you think so?
Do you doubt me? I've had sheepdogs at my heels since I was old enough to walk. There'll be someone around offering a reward for her.
If I hear of such, I'll tell him you found the type.
Eh,
I've a better idea. McFarlane's is quite a step from here. And likely in a day or two, I'll be out on the hills wintering the flock. So you take care of the dog, and I'll share the reward with you.
Share and share alike?
In just a moment. I'm the one that found the dog.
And I'll have to feed the dog, and I'll have...
All right. I've no time to argue with you. I'm to lunch with John Trail, and he'll think I've fallen among thieves. As indeed I have.
Jock hands the puppy to the mustache blacksmith, then strolls off. Later, inside a tavern, the portly John Trail carries a tray of dishes past Jock.
Good heavens, man. Are you still here?
I'd be a fool to deny it.
Oh, McFarlane will be tearing his hair for fear you've disappeared with the sheep money, eh?
'Tis an idea I've had, John Trail. But the prices were too low to tempt me.
Gosh, 2 o'clock, and I barely tasted a bite myself. Here, Angus, take that.
A young man takes the tray from John.
I think I'll pay for my meal and be on my way.
Nonsense, man. Have some more tea. Smoke your pipe. And keep me company while I have some, too. Hmm? Oh, it'll do McFarlane good if you come back a bit late. Let him learn to get along without you, if he can.
He'll have to learn pretty soon, for I'm leaving him in the spring.
Leaving?
Aye.
Leaving McFarland? After all this time?
He sets a plate of cookies on the table.
I have been with him for a while.
A while? You've been with him 30 years, to my certain knowledge. Long enough for a baby to grow into a man.
Providing it was not a girl baby.
Yeah, tell me, what happened, man? Why are you leaving McFarland?
I have a wish to work in the places I knew as a lad. Mm-hmm. To meet the children I played with, to see the things I remember. The more years that pass, the more I miss the old familiar ways. Streams, the hills, and the old familiar faces. I have a great wish to go home, John.
Ah, well, that's a very natural... What's that?
He opens the front door and sees the collie puppy sitting outside.
Oh, have you heard of the fine reputation of my food? Or are you lost? Huh?
The puppy cocks her head to the side. She enters the tavern and runs to Jock, who picks her up in his arms.
Well, now.
Friend of yours, Jock?
I found the puppy in the grass market. I left her with Adam till the owner came to claim her.
Clever of her to follow you here.
Ah, a good dog will follow a friend.
What will you do with her now?
Well, I've always wanted a dog of my own.
Then take her off with you. What's the hinder?
Well, I must confess, gentlemen, I've had the thought. And if the pup were just a mongrel, I'd say no one would mind one way or t'other. But this is a well-blooded dog of great value. And there'll be a hue and cry for her all over Edinburgh.
Oh, what's that to you, man? You'll be out at McFarland's farm, and no one the wiser.
Except Adam, who saw me find the dog, and ye and the rest of ye. No, it is too open a secret for me to start a career of crime. But you might pass the word if anyone's looking for a lost collie. I'll be keeping the dog safe out at McFarland's farm. Mm-hmm. And if they don't get it before the first snows, then they can't get it till spring. But I'll be out in the hills wintering the flock.
We'll pass the word, man.
Hey, thank you.
Aye.
You know, I've always wanted a dog of my own.
Holding the puppy, Jock waves and heads off. Now, at the sheep farm, Jock carries the puppy as he walks with John and two men.
Will you be taking the wee doggy up in the hills with you tomorrow?
Well, I had the thought, McFarlane.
Ah, she'd be no use to you.
Oh, man, I'd not take her for that. But I'd like to train one more good dog before I stop. Now, if her owner should come for her while I'm in the hills...
I'll tell him the dog will be back in the spring.
No hurry for the pup.
She's not the working kind of dog.
Then tis little you know about dogs. Give me the training of her and she'll outdo any sheepdog on the farm. See for yourself now. Look you here. Off you go.
He sets the puppy on the ground and watches as she runs over to a flock of chicks, nudging and kicking them into one bunch.
You see, she has the natural instinct for it. See how she herds them together, brings them in slowly. That's a good lass. A plaything, huh? A pet, is she? There's a natural-born sheepdog if I ever did see one. Oh, no, you cannot fool old Jock on a matter like this.
The collie runs over to a few sheep grazing near a stone wall. One sheep butts the puppy with its head, and the little collie turns and scampers back to Jock. He picks her up.
You're a judge of sheepdogs, Jock.
Don't blame the dog. Blame the food you feed her.
The food?
I've noticed you losing weight this past few days. You cannot expect a hungry dog to handle sheep.
The other dogs prosper on it.
A plump woman comes out of the house and sets down a pan of food. Several larger dogs run up and converge around the pan, eating. Jock sets the puppy down.
Bad food, eh? The pup don't seem to be avoiding it.
The men watch as the puppy struggles to get to the food. Two dogs leave, and the collie takes a few hesitant steps forward. Now the puppy darts under at another dog's legs and finally reaches the pan. One by one, the other dogs trot off, leaving the puppy with the empty pan. As she licks the corner, Jock steps over, picks her up with his right hand, and knocks on the door to the farmhouse.
No wonder you're losing weight. But it was a gallant try. Another dish, if you please, Mrs. McFarland.
You've picked a fine dog, Jock. I dare say her ladyship will have to be spoon-fed. With the white napkin on the table.
That's a good name for the pup.
You can laugh if you will, but she's not the first noble Scottish lady that's been forced to live among rough peasants like yourself.
Mrs. McFarland hands him a fresh bowl of food.
Well then, her name or title is little matter among friends. So eat your food, my bonny lassie. We've a long road tomorrow.
Mrs. McFarland dismisses Jock with a wave and goes inside. Now in the seaside field near the large jutting rock, Jock follows his flock of sheep as they bound through the grass. Walking with his staff, he carries Lassie under his arm while a black and white adult dog runs ahead.
No. Lassie, you're a very lucky dog. Old Scott up yonder's a fine dog to learn from. And if you'll just watch him, you'll know exactly what to do. Now then, come on. There you are.
He sets Lassie down on the grass. She sniffs the ground, then hops forward.
Watch, Scott. There now. Do you see that?
He points across the field where Scott herds the sheep toward a hill.
That's what I want you to learn. See that?
He nudges Lassie with his hooked shepherd's staff.
Come. There now. And mind you, no barking. Remember, a bark means business. And if you're always exercising your tongue like some people I know, the sheep will pay no heed to you when you most need them to. Now mind you that. You know that, don't you?
Huh? He tucks Lassie under his arm and carries her towards Scott and the flock of sheep. Now, Jock stands with Scott and the adolescent Lassie in a rolling field dusted with a thin layer of snow. Jock leans down and scratches Lassie's head as he surveys the herd before him.
A little moving around would be a warming thing for you to do. Of course, good sheepdogs would never play games, but there's no harm in a bit of exercise. So off you go now, both of you. Go on, and lively. And Lassie, follow old Scott. Follow Scott now.
Scott and Lassie take off at a run after the sheep.
Down with you. Down. Watch old Scott, Lassie, there.
Scott lays low and Lassie stops.
That's better. That's it.
Lassie stands alertly in place, her gaze focused on the herd.
To the other side. Come on. Round there. Lassie, follow old Scott. Follow him.
Scott and Lassie circle around the flock of sheep and head them in the opposite direction.
Easy now, easy.
Scott lays down on his haunches again as Lassie stands attentively in place beside him, watching the sheep.
That's better.
Scott stands up and the two head forward. Now, back at the seaside, Jock strolls past bushes of pink heather with the two dogs while the herd grazes.
Well, now, spring's a fine time to be in the hills. But of course the people in the city will be wanting fresh meat. So I think we'd better go, huh? Do you think so? So I think we'll gather up the flock and be on our way. Off you go, Lassie. You can do it yourself now. That's the girl.
Scott Scott stays back with Jock as the adult lassie runs out around the sheep, her tan coat billowing in the wind as she herds them together. Now at the livestock market in Edinburgh, Lassie moves the sheep down a cobblestone street into a fenced wooden pen. Behind her, Jock and McFarland ride up in a horse-drawn cart. Once the sheep are inside the pen, men in aprons swing the gate shut.
Hi, McFarland. Hey, lads, it's really spring. Here's the first lambs of the season.
First man with his money up gets first pick.
The bearded McFarland climbs down from the cart. Later, he counts out 8 silver coins from a tan leather pouch into Jock's open palm.
That's what I owe you, Jock.
I still say you're an obstinate old fool to leave.
Well, I'll not argue with you about that. You will take care of Lassie, will you not? And see that she gets a bone now and then?
I'll see to it.
But one with a bit of meat on it, mind you. You'll find she'll earn her keep till her master comes to claim her.
You are the only master Lassie knows. She'll not take kindly to another.
But Lassie is not my own dog. Therefore, I cannot take her. And there's an end to it.
Good luck to you, Joe. Come, jump in, Lassie. Here,
as McFarland climbs into the front of the cart, Jock guides Lassie into the back.
Come here. Give us your head now.
He slides a rope leash around Lassie's neck, then leans in to talk.
Now, if I were a young man, I'd never let them take you from me. But as it is, we'd be parted sooner or later. What with me dying or your owner coming to claim you, you'll be better off at the farm, Lassie. There's my bonny lass.
You're a fool, Jock. An obstinate old fool.
Come on. McFarland takes the reins and rides off with Lassie, leaving Jock behind in the market. As he watches them leave, Jock throws a pack and a blanket over his shoulder. Later, in the tavern, John carries a pair of metal mugs and a cork jug to Jock's table.
Jock, you've barely tasted.
Hey, I've little appetite.
That's not the reason.
That's the reason.
Well, then have a toddy. Eh? A toddy. A cup of kindness before you leave Edinburgh.
Yeah. Aye. Thank you.
Jock takes a drink as John takes a seat.
Of course, you've got to do more than wave a bottle over a mug to get sociability.
Sociability? You're a fine one to talk of sociability. You were small company yesterday and no company at all today.
John scowls as he pours from the jug.
Well, I have stout shoes, and as soon as the heat goes out of the sun, I'll start my long walk home.
Well, I'll miss you, Jock.
Thank you. Thank you. You didn't know her, but Lassie was fine company for a man.
Aye, she seemed pleasant enough.
She had more brains and used them better than most men.
Jock lifts his mug to his lips, then stops and turns.
Did you hear that?
What's that?
There's many a dog in Edinburgh.
Hey, but John, man, 'tis Lassie.
Nonsense, man.
Lassie pushes through the front door.
There's a good girl. You're a fine lassie.
There's the bookseller next door. Selling books is a quiet trade. Now stop the racket and I'll call the police. Shut up, you bookworm. You'll have to take Lassie now, Jock.
Well, my mind's against it. I suppose you're glad now you got me into trouble, eh? I'll take her back to McFarland's.
And wait here until she runs back to you again?
He takes the mug from Jock.
You're not drinking my place. So with foolish thoughts like that, it's plain you've had too much. Can you keep a dog tied up forever?
What can a man do?
A man can use his head. You'll take the dog with ye. Of course you... What's wrong with you, man? It's the only way to make you both happy. Every dog chooses its own master.
Eh, but not its owner.
Oh, but you're too obstinate. So you'll break the dog's heart and your own before you have to. Well, I'm glad you're leaving Edinburgh. For I've had enough of this stiff-backed, foolish, stupid, big-headed, nonsensical...
Well, now you're a great talker, John Train.
Then you'll take Lassie with you?
Well, it's the only way I'll get my toddy back.
John hands him back his mug and lifts his own in a toast.
Cheers to you.
Later, John watches Jock and Lassie from the doorstep as they head outside.
Well, good luck to ye. Pleasant journey.
Thank you, John. And if you should travel north, you'll pay us a visit.
Oh, you must count on that. Here, Keep a sharp eye on the old scoundrel, eh, lassie?
John pats the dog.
Good girl.
Come along now.
As they walk off, John waves at them, his face beaming. Nighttime. Jock leads Lassie down a dark street as two men follow in the shadows behind.
You'll like it up north, lass. Fresh, clean air. Not like the smell of the city. We'll be along the coast before the moon is up. Eh?
The two mustached men follow him with their hands in their pockets. One wears a brown derby hat and the other a slouchy fedora. Jock glances over his shoulder at them, then stops and faces them.
Beg your pardon.
Lassie bares her fangs.
Quiet now.
Jock warily eyes the two strangers. As they approach Jock, the man in the derby speaks.
My friend and I... Well, could you spare a penny or two?
Have another bite of food all day.
Well, now, lads, I work for my money. And you both look able to do the same. For today's a celebration with me. I'll stand you both a meal.
As Jock reaches in his pocket, the strangers grab him. Lassie jumps up and bites the man in the fedora as Jock and the other man grapple on the ground. As one bandit slugs Jock, Lassie fends off the other thief. Jock struggles with the man in the derby, and the two men roll on the dirty cobblestone. Lassie runs to Jock's aid and bites down on the thief's hand as the man pins Jock to the ground. She chases the thief down a dark alley as the accomplice picks up Jock's scattered coins. Lassie returns and grabs the man's arm. He drops the coins and tries to fight off the attacking dog. As he gets to his feet, Lassie snaps at him again and again, then chases him down the alley. Jock sits up and wipes his face, and Lassie runs back to him. She licks his face as he slowly gets to his feet. Jock gently pats Lassie's head, then folds his thick plaid shawl under his arm. He lumbers over to his pack, then retrieves some remaining coins from the street. Lassie picks up the money pouch with her mouth. Jock takes it from her, then grabs one end of his pack and drags it down the street. Now, at an inn, a stout red-headed woman shows Jock and Lassie into a simple guest room. She lights a candle.
And keep the dog quiet, or I'll have you out. This is a respectable lodging house, do you hear? Do you hear?
Aye, she'll be quiet.
Well, not let you in at all. You haven't paid in advance.
Well, I got into a bit of trouble.
Trouble? Not too much drink is always trouble.
As the woman leaves, Jock splashes water over his wounds from a ceramic pitcher.
No complaining, now. Tis only for the night.
He limps over to the bed, followed by Lassie. Jock takes a seat with Lassie at his knee.
I'm not as good a fighter as I used to be, Lassie.
He lies down on his side, resting his bloody head against a pillow. Lassie stares up at him as he closes his eyes, then places her paw on top of his wrist. He reopens his eyes and raises his finger at her.
No noise now. They'll put us both in the street.
He reaches out and pets Lassie on the top of her head.
But you're a bonny, lovely lassie.
Jock closes his eyes. Morning. Outside the lodging house, the red-headed innkeeper talks to two policemen in top hats as a crowd watches.
I asked no questions. He had the money to pay, so I put him in a room. This morning, I went to wake him. The dog was whining and whimpering, so I sent my old man round for the doctor. And the doctor said to get the police.
She leads the policeman inside to Jock's room, where Lassie sits beside the foot of the bed. A gray-bearded man in a dark knee-length coat examines Jock's head.
Concussion. Probably died before morning.
Any of you know the man?
His name's John Gray. The name is here in his Bible.
Another pauper burial, eh?
We'll need a few men to help carry.
There's a well-filled purse here.
Then according to law, he's no pauper. To be put away like some jailbird.
Aye.
Lassie rests her head next to Jock's leg on the bed. Now, eight pallbearers carry a casket through a gate into a churchyard. Nearby, a young man and dark-haired woman stand and watch. Lassie follows the procession.
Stay out of here now.
One of the pallbearers pushes Lassie back and shuts the gate in front of her. The young observer walks over and pets her.
That's all right, girl. In you go now.
No animals permitted in the churchyard, you know that.
Surely you'll not stop one true mourner from the burial.
We make no exceptions.
I
Hard cases make hard laws, my lass.
I'm not your lass, and don't take the grand manner with me. I knew you before you started reading law. Aye, before you could read at all.
She's no match for us, but I'll get you in.
If you try taking this dog one step farther, I'll have you brought up in court.
And you'll have a good case, my lass. I'll be at the bar in a year and glad to handle the case myself. For you're certain to win. But the dog is going into the burial today.
He lifts her up and Lassie rushes in.
Oh, now see what you've done.
I've been seeking an excuse for a long time. My lass.
He holds her waist. Nighttime. Lassie lies outside the gate. The young woman walks over.
Father.
Yes?
That dog is still here.
Don't fret yourself about her. She'll get hungry and go home.
As the man heads back inside the church building, the woman padlocks a chain around the fence.
Go home now. A churchyard is no place for you to stay. Go away home.
Lassie sticks her nose through the gate.
You can't come in. Go home now.
Lassie walks away with her head held low, and the dark-haired woman turns and goes back inside. Down the sidewalk, Lassie places her front paws on a parapet and gazes through the iron bars at the cemetery. She steps down and turns back toward the gate, where a man carries a bale of straw from a horse cart.
Here's the straw for your flower beds, Mr. Brown.
I did not think you'd be by till tomorrow.
Mr. Brown unlocks the gate and lets in the delivery man. As they walk around the side of the stone building, the gate swings open. Lassie runs inside and makes her way past several rows of gravesites marked by a variety of headstones. Some are curved and rectangular, others are topped with crosses. Lassie arrives at a freshly buried grave and lies down next to it. Daytime. Lassie steps through the open door of John Trail's tavern and looks around. John stands at a table with his back turned, pouring coffee. Lassie walks over to him and nudges his thigh with her snout.
Well, here's a surprise. Oh, where's old Jock? Eh? Oh, what's happened, eh? You've not run away? Why, girl, you're near starved. Here.
As Angus walks past, John takes a bowl of broth from his tray and places it under a table. The dog laps it up.
And there's more after that.
As Lassie drinks the broth, John walks around the table and tips the chair against it. He watches the dog, puts his hands on his hips, and bites his lower lip. Later, Lassie sleeps under the table. John watches the dog from a nearby table as he sits with the law student from the churchyard.
That's all I know till Lassie walked in here. When she wakes, she may tell me more.
I tell you, Father, I've seen that dog before.
Oh, for a Scotsman to see a collie is not a matter of great wonder, eh? Have a better bite, sir.
They'll be blowing the sunset bugle at the castle, and I have a lecture then. Oh. So I'd best be off to the university.
Aye. Tell your mother I may be late myself. Hmm. And whether I'll be alone or with company, I won't know till the dog wakes.
Now I am late.
Aye. Hurry!
Lassie wakes up and runs for the front door just as John shuts it behind his son.
Now, Lassie, the bugle's for the soldiers. Go back to sleep, girl.
She rakes her paw against the door.
You're all for leaving, eh?
He lets her outside.
Lush, what's the bugle got to do with you?
Lassie returns and tugs his hand with her mouth.
You want me to come with you? All right. Angus, mind the shop. Come on.
Aye, sir.
He retrieves his hat and follows Lassie outside. The dog leads him down a sidewalk along a cobblestone street. Now, in front of the churchyard, a lamplighter lights a street lamp with a long pole. Lassie runs to the closed gate and sticks her paw between the bars.
Here, now, Lassie, be a good dog. Go on now. Go on. Oh, all right. We'll come here another day. Take me to where old Jock is. So this is where you wanted to go. The gate's closed at bugle time. Still, we'll take care of that.
John unlatches the gate, then follows Lassie inside. Mr. Brown steps out of the stone building.
Ah, Mr. Trail. Eh? It isn't customary for folk to prowl about the churchyard in the evening.
Where did the dog go?
Dog? There's no dog here. It isn't permitted.
Aye, but there is a dog. I let it in myself.
You let it in?
Aye.
I'll have the law on you. Can't you read, man?
He shows him a sign on the gatepost.
No dogs permitted in the churchyard. violators will be prosecuted. And it's signed by the minister and elders of Greyfriars Church.
Tut, tut, James Brown. It's a good and necessary regulation. But it's not the law of the land.
Brown's no. daughter arrives.
Oh, good evening, Susan. Aye, it's a collie dog I have in mind. I know her master well. And if he's buried here, I'll take Lassie myself.
Aye, there was such a dog here.
But after the burial, father had put the dog out. Well, that was 3 days ago.
If you'll show me the grave, Lassie will not be far off. No.
The three head through the gate. Mr. Brown points across the cemetery.
Now, there's the grave. You can see for yourself there's no dog.
Well, I doubt if this man was your friend. The police said he was a stranger in Edinburgh. The name was John Gray.
John Gray.
John takes in a breath and nods.
Aye. Jock and I were good friends. And Lassie was all the old man had to love. So the least I can do now is to care for the dog.
John turns and cups his hands around his mouth.
Hey! Have you seen a dog? A collie dog!
Windows open in a stone building next door.
We're looking for a dog. Have any of the folks seen one?
A fine racket to be making in a churchyard.
We lost a collie.
Lindsay.
A girl in a plaid dress.
Run down and tell Mr. Brown there's a heathen trampling on the graves.
This is Mr. Brown, you old nosy.
Oh, what a scandal. I took you for a sober man. Mrs. McPherson. Mrs. McPherson. Mr. Brown's having a drunken party in the churchyard.
Why, you libelous old hag.
Oh.
We've lost a dog. A dog, you hear?
Tell your friends that the first one who finds the dog and bring it to the Greyfriars dining rooms will get a bright new silver shilling.
Lassie sneaks behind a tomb and lies down by Jock's grave.
Now don't forget, whoever brings the dog to the Greyfriars dining rooms will get a silver shilling. One bright new shilling.
Now in John's dining room.
I'll finish up now, Angus.
Have a good night, sir.
Thank you.
I'll see you in the morning.
Good night.
Good night, sir.
As Angus heads into the kitchen, John opens the front door. Mr. Brown carries a squirming sack over his shoulder.
What's a do here?
Here's your dog.
What's that?
Brown sets the sack on the hardwood floor. Lassie climbs out and shakes out her coat, then goes to the front door and scratches. John watches her with his mouth agape.
Yeah, Lassie, you'll take off all the paint.
She nips his hand.
Yeah, in a minute, Lassie, in a minute.
Lassie sits. John goes to Brown.
You have a short memory. Not an hour ago, you told me you'd keep the dog for a few days.
Well, I warned you when you offered a shilling reward, I'd have trouble with the children. After you left, the place was swarming with them. Well, there she is. And it's out of the question to take her back.
Lassie goes to the door.
You're staying here.
She won't stay here.
She's not coming into the churchyard again. And good night, you, Mr. Trail.
But Mr. Brown.
Wag your tongue at someone else. I've had enough of it.
He takes his hand off the doorknob and faces John.
You'll be owing me a shilling.
What's that?
It was the reward he offered and the only way to get rid of the children.
Shilling.
John takes a silver coin from his vest pocket.
You're a hard man to deal with, Mr. Brown.
John scowls and hands Mr. Brown the coin. As Brown heads out, John holds Lassie back. Lassie claws at the door with her front paws.
Hold your gab. Hold your gab. Enough of that. Here. You're coming home with me. Aye? With me? If I have to drag you. Yeah. Stop that now. Stop it. Stop the noise.
He removes his jacket, vest, and suspenders. Later, he leads Lassie down a sidewalk with a leash made from the orange suspenders. He holds his baggy pants up with his other hand. Lassie pulls against the leash in the opposite direction.
You're taking an advantage, Lassie. A mean, underhanded advantage.
He hikes his drooping pants back up over his waist and continues dragging the resistant collie down the sidewalk.
Hold your gap! Hold your gap!
John's son notices them as he mounts an apartment stoop.
Father.
John's pants start to fall.
What? You're not? No, I'm not. And I know what you mean.
Hush that racket. Let a body sleep.
A woman swings open a window.
A fine racket for a respectable neighborhood.
Mother, it's false.
Oh,
Oh, he's been drinking up all the whiskey samples, eh?
Help me get the dog in the house. Hold your gun!
Lassie jumps back, pulling at the leash.
Stop barking. We're going to call the police.
A man's home is his castle. I can keep a roaring lion in the house if I choose.
You'd best turn the dog over to the police, Father.
I was going to send her to McFarland's farm in a few days.
We'll have you in jail before then.
All right, pick her up and help me take her down to the police station. They'll not be harsh with her.
No, the police treat them well enough for a matter of 3 days. Then if the owner doesn't show up, chloroform, that's the end.
They do that to Lassie?
It is the law.
There's the policeman now.
Good. We put an end to this.
Police? What'll I do?
When you've no defense, flee the jurisdiction.
All my conscience.
The son carries Lassie off, now at McFarland's.
And that's why I'm calling on ye, counting on ye to care for Lassie as a kindness to old Jock's memory.
Did you hear, wife, about Jock being buried 4 days ago in Greyfriars churchyard? And Lassie sleeping close by every night.
Aye, Lassie was fair fond of the old man. Isn't it a grand thing for a poor old shepherd to be buried in a fine place like Greyfriars?
I'm telling you, Jock would rather be alive in the Pentland Hills than dead in the finest churchyard in the world.
But it's a proud thing to have your body put away in Greyfriars once you're through with it. Come along now.
Keep a tight rope on her.
I'll do better than that. I'll lock her up in the barn. Come, Lassie.
McFarland takes Lassie's leash and leads her off the back of John's wagon toward a gray brick barn. A few red chickens scatter as the two approach the barn door. Inside, the barn is lined with stacked bushels and tan sacks. McFarland removes Lassie's leash and wags his finger at her.
Now stay. Behave yourself.
No, behave or I'll have to keep you tight.
McFarland pushes Lassie back from the door, then shuts it behind him. Lassie shakes out her coat, then claws and sniffs at the door. She turns and looks around the dark barn, then runs back to the entrance and starts to dig frantically into the soft earth under the door. Later, outside the barn door, Lassie's digging paws are exposed in the hole, now a foot deep. She pokes her head out and tries to squeeze through the narrow opening. Now on her stomach, she claws at the ground and continues digging. After scraping out more dirt, she wriggles under the door, narrowly wedges through the hole, and crawls out. Lassie runs down the road and arrives at a pale stone bridge that stretches over a river. She stops at the edge, turns back, and cocks her ears, then dashes underneath. McFarland approaches on the dirt road in his horse cart. As he passes, Lassie waits attentively on a narrow ledge beneath one of the arches along the riverside. McFarland crosses the bridge as Lassie listens by the water. She looks up from her hiding place, then runs out and returns to the base of the bridge. She pauses and stares after McFarland, then darts into a wooded area nearby. Now, Lassie makes her way down a steep, rocky hill. The collie zigzags down a winding dirt path until she comes to a clearing and a waterfall. She surveys the area, then continues on her way. On the other side of the falls, she bounds up a sloped, grassy hillside as the cascading water surges down the cliff behind her. Now, in a rolling meadow at the edge of a mountain, Lassie runs through the grass toward a thick grove of pine trees. Later, she follows a dirt path along the seashore. Waves gently lap against the rocky shore as she continues on her way. Now, dark clouds fill the sky. Her coat drenched, Lassie trudges through a dark forest as lightning flashes illuminate her path. Keeping her head down, she makes her way through the trees and past a bed of ferns, then stops for a moment. With her paws in a puddle, she squints her eyes against the pelting rainfall and takes a look around. After moving forward a few more steps, she shakes out her dripping coat, then continues on. Lassie runs on through the driving rain. Morning. As the sun hovers over the horizon, a cluster of clouds gleam with brilliant orange rays. Now, a dry Lassie emerges from the forest, her tail wagging. She stops and quickly surveys the area, then bounds down a bank and into a river. As she moves into deeper water, she begins to paddle. Her long, slender snout bobs just above the surface as she swims through the murky water. She swims under a shadowy canopy of trees, then arrives at a wider river branch. She follows the strong current forward into the broad waterway, paddling steadily downstream. The bright sun shines down on her lightly bobbing head as she moves through the water. Later, she approaches a steep bank overgrown with scruffy vegetation. She swims past a leafy bush in the shallow water near the shoreline, then steps wearily over several submerged tree roots and makes her way to the bank. Lassie stands in the shallow water and shakes herself off, then slowly steps onto dry land. Hanging her head low, she walks slowly up the bank, then starts to climb up the steep, grassy hill. Halfway up, she pauses and takes heavy breaths, then continues. A breeze ruffles her matted fur as she makes it to the top. Taking slow, heavy steps, she lumbers on, her fur clumped with pieces of mud. Morning. Lassie lies at the gate of Greyfriars Churchyard. Mr. Brown approaches, fumbling with his keys. Lassie wakes and raises to her feet.
Well, now, go away.
He unlocks the chain. Lassie moves forward and tries to enter.
Out with you. You cannot come in here. I've my own living to think of.
She paws the gate. Brown glances down the street, then wags a finger at her.
Now stay here, Lassie.
He latches the gate and starts off up the street. Lassie lays back down. Brown marches up the sidewalk and over to a tall, mustached policeman.
Trouble so early in the morning?
No, just a question, Sergeant.
Hey, you're new here, are you not?
I've just this morning been transferred. And a good thing, too, for I find that my predecessor has been too lenient and easygoing. What's your question, sir?
About stray dogs now. What's to be done with them?
It is covered in the Borough Police Act. We take them up and send a letter to the owner, as noted on the dog's collar.
What if there be no collar, nor no owner either?
The law thought of that. If no owner appears, the dog is held for 3 days and then destroyed. Quite painless.
Now there's a foolish, stupid, wicked law.
I warn you, my friend, no criticism or mockery of the law while I'm around. Just give me the details about this beast.
I just wanted to know for the future. Thank you kindly.
The policeman tips his hat as Brown walks off. He raises his eyebrows, then heads in the opposite direction. Brown returns to Lassie.
Now what am I going to do with you, Lassie? Susan, come out a minute, will you? What am I going to do with you?
Susan rushes out and unlatches the gate. She crouches down next to Lassie and cradles the dog's head in her hands.
Oh, but you're a devil of a dog, Lassie. The question is, what are we going to do with her?
I'm aware of the question, daughter. What troubles me is the answer.
Susan looks over Lassie's dirty coat.
Now the only thing to do is...
Yes?
Give her a good washing and some food to eat.
And after that?
Well, if you and I aren't clever enough to hide one small dog in a great big churchyard like this...
The Dominie will discharge us if we're caught.
Maybe John Trail will feed us, too. Come, Lassie. Come
now, Lassie. Parishioners file out of church. John shakes the bespectacled minister's hand.
An excellent sermon, Dominie.
It is kind of you to say so.
So,
business on the Sabbath, Mr. Trail? Eh?
John hides a package wrapped in brown paper behind his back.
That is
it's a present for a friend who cannot get about.
Aye. So, if you'll excuse us, Dominie?
I think I'll go along with you for a bit of the way. I've a mind to take a stroll about the churchyard.
Well, it's a pleasant thought. Aye, and I think I'd like to join ye. Here, William, take the present. Run along and present it with my compliments.
I welcome your company. I've no wish to interfere.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. No. Don't stand gawking there. Just explain I'm strolling through the churchyard with the minister.
I'll deliver the message.
Aye.
You may count on it.
Aye.
John and the minister start their stroll. Later, William and Susan feed Lassie from the unwrapped brown paper. The dog sits in a wooden box next to a bench. As the minister, John, and Mr. Brown approach, William hides the food and quickly shuts the box's raised lid.
Well now, William, is Susan the ailing friend you spoke of?
Oh, I've done my errand. I just came back to call for Father.
And I was just inviting him to stay for tea. Why don't we all go to the cottage for some refreshments?
Splendid. Not I, Mr. Trail. For the past few weeks, each time I've come here, you've lured me with tea and scones and freshly made preserves. I've a mind to sit and read for a bit.
The minister steps over to the stone bench. He sees the large wooden box.
Another of your improvements, Mr. Brown? I trust it has a more serviceable excuse than the bell at the gate.
If it bothers you, Dominie, I'd be glad to move it. Here now, William, give us a hand.
No. No work on the Sabbath. I dare say you had a good reason for placing it here.
Oh, I have a reason, Dominie. You may rest assured of that.
Good.
The minister starts to sit, then stops and folds his arms.
What is your reason, Mr. Brown?
Well, now, you see, there are a great many leaves. I rake them up. Then there's papers. You'd be surprised how many folk drop a scrap of paper here and a scrap there.
I dare say I'm one of the chief offenders. But I'm always walking around with bits and scraps in my pocket. Notes I jot down as I read. Thoughts for my sermons. Even quotations. Just last night I came across a quotation which I particularly relish. A bit from Sir Walter Scott. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
He lifts the lid and tosses in a few scraps of paper. He turns and sees Lassie inside.
Hey now, what have we here?
Why, it's a dog.
So it is.
Imagine finding a dog here.
I can hardly believe my eyes.
And I can hardly believe your words, Mr. Trail. How long did you think to keep Lassie a secret?
Why, you even know her name.
And why not? There's not a lad at the school that doesn't know as much.
I told you the children would be our undoing. They've all got wagging tongues.
Mr. Brown is not to blame.
I do not blame the dog either. But a churchyard is no place for it to live.
What's to be done now?
It cannot be pleasing to God to see one of his creatures so restrained. Come out now. Give Lassie her liberty on the Sabbath.
But she'll be seen.
Don't worry, Mr. Brown. I shall do my duty by reporting the matter to the elders of Greyfriars Church.
Oh, but then there's an end to Lassie.
I shall put the case of Lassie on the agenda for the next church meeting. But I'm an absent-minded man, and the elders are fond of their own speeches. Who can say how long it will be before the matter comes up for discussion?
If it ever does.
Nighttime. The mustache approaches the churchyard gate. The second officer holds a bundled yellow net as the mustached policeman works at the lock and chains on the gate. Inside the yard, Lassie sleeps next to her master's grave. Her muzzle rests deep in the thick green grass covering the burial mound. Lassie's ears perk up and she looks around. She gets up and nervously paces back and forth. She gazes around, then settles back down on the grass. Behind her, the tombstone reads, John Gray, 1798 to 1863. Back at the gate, the two policemen enter. The sergeant reaches up and holds the small bell attached to the gate still as they close it behind them. They march off into the shadowy churchyard. As Lassie dozes, the yellow netting falls over her. The two policemen rush forward and grab her. Lassie struggles as the two men lift her and carry her off. Morning. John sweeps the sidewalk near his shop.
Good morning, Davy. Go right in. I've got your breakfast warm.
Are you Mr. John Trail?
Huh? What ails you, man? You're a big boy to be playing games. Go have your breakfast.
I've eaten.
Oh, no. You're not angry over the bit of a joke we had yesterday?
I've no wish to discuss it. It's bad taste to make jokes that lower the dignity of the uniform. Leads to trouble, too.
My license is paid, so if you'll excuse me, I'll get on with my work.
There's another offense that she may not be aware of.
Eh? Lush, but the uniform's made a terror of you, Davy. Go in, man, and have a bite to eat. A cup of hot tea will take the starch out of your tongue.
Are you Mr. John Trail?
Yes, to my friends, I'm Jock Trail. But to you, from now on, I'm Mr. John Trail.
'Tis all I wanted to know.
Aye.
Here's a summons for you, Mr. John Trail.
Sergeant Davy hands him the paper, now in a courtroom.
Mr. John Trail, do you admit to owning or harboring the dog upon which you have failed to pay the license tax of 12 shillings?
I would be pleased to pay for Lass's license now.
I'm sure you would, now that you've been caught concealing the dog.
The bald judge smirks at Davy. The policeman stands up straight.
When did you first purchase the dog?
Oh, well, I didn't precisely purchase her, Your Honor.
Don't split hairs, Mr. Trail. However you acquired title, you are liable before the law as owner, are you not?
John nervously rubs his hat.
Well, as to that, I'd be reluctant to give an answer, one way or the other.
If you're not our master, who is?
John hesitates and turns to William.
Who is?
You must answer, Father.
The only master she knows is buried in Greyfriars churchyard. And since the burial, the dog has always slept there, at the grave.
In that case, there should be witnesses to such an extraordinary tale. I shall recess for half an hour to permit you to secure those witnesses.
Well, I doubt if I could do that.
I doubt it myself, Mr. Trail.
If Your Honor please, there are witnesses in plenty. Unfortunately, they cannot be produced in a half hour. Mr. Brown, the caretaker at Greyfriars, knows Lassie well, but Mr. Brown is ill. Dr. Lee, the minister, is out of town. The other witnesses would be the tenement children and the Harriet school laddies. They've all made a pet of Lassie.
Why are they not in court?
Because, as Your Honor should know, they are too young to be competent witnesses.
Well done, laddie.
As Mr. Trail's counsel, you should request an adjournment of sufficient time to secure competent witnesses. Surely you should know that.
I would have done so had I been Mr. Trail's counsel. I'm Mr. Trail's son, and I'll not be at the bar for a few months.
Then don't interfere with these proceedings until you're qualified.
William sits.
If you wish to get yourself suitable counsel...
I think not, Your Honor. The law in such a matter cannot be so complicated. If the court will permit me, I would be honored to pay Lassie's license.
You are not the dog's owner.
Well, I'd be proud to take the responsibility of caring for Lassie. She came to me near starved, 3 days after her master's burial.
Your humanity is commendable, but the payment of the license cannot be accepted from you. I shall therefore impose the usual fine, and the dog will be put to death as by law provided.
We appeal.
I warn you, young man, once more and you leave this courtroom.
With due respect, Your Honor, I must take an appeal upon such a decision to the Lord Provost and all of the magistrates.
They have more important business than reviewing dog cases. You'll be laughed out of court.
I have no intention of abandoning Lassie. You commend me for my humanity. But you ask me to let the dog die. For a technicality.
Enough of speeches, Mr. Trail. You've heard the decision. You have your appeal. Court is adjourned.
Davy steps down from the stand.
And as for you, Davy, when you're next in my neighborhood, come in again and take another cup of tea. You'll be all the better man for the lesson the dog can teach you. Not to bite the hand that feeds you.
Now, at Greyfriars, Susan walks two men to a carriage.
Thank you very much, Miss Brown, for your courtesy in showing me about.
Oh, we are honored, Sir Charles. If my father were not ill, I'm sure your visit to Greyfriars would have been spent in a great deal more instructive company.
But not more charming.
Sir Charles tips his hat.
Thank you, Nath. And I hope your father mends soon.
Sir Charles and the white-haired Lord Provost step into the elegant carriage. They wave to Susan as they ride off. A small crowd disperses as John and William walk up.
The Lord Provost, eh?
What's the occasion, Susan?
He's been showing a chap from London about the city. A Sir Charles Lorry.
A chap from London.
What's so amusing?
That chap from London is one of the judges of the Queen's Bench.
He lectured to us yesterday at the university.
Oh, it is a good thing I did not know, or I'd have been frightened speechless. Well, he seemed like an ordinary man. Nothing impressive.
He'll be impressive tomorrow. In the morning at the Burr Hall, he's to be given the freedom of the city by the Lord Provost.
Oh.
That's why they'll not be able to hear Lassie's appeal until tomorrow afternoon.
Lassie's appeal? Where is she? What's happened?
Oh, well, as to that, the police are taking care of Lassie for a time.
What do they want with her?
Well, a matter of not having a license. We've just been to the court.
But if you lose the appeal...
The police will put an end to Lassie.
Susan stares pleadingly at William, then rushes into the house. The men exchange a glance, and John shrugs sadly. Now, Sergeant Davy walks Lassie down the street. She jerks at her leash and pulls Davy backwards. He draws the rope in closer and holds her by the scruff of her neck. As they approach a street corner, a parade of soldiers wearing tall, furry grenadier hats and uniform kilts march by. Lassie wriggles free of the leash and bolts off.
Come back!
As she darts into the middle of the marching soldiers, Davy walks alongside the soldiers.
I get my hands on you. I'm telling you to come out.
Davy addresses a soldier.
Drag him out like a good chap.
Break ranks, not I.
Come out or I'll go in after you.
I don't think you will, my lad.
Will I not, eh?
The police chap thinks he's going to break our ranks.
What's to get his name in the papers, eh? Among the death notices.
Come out, you child of the devil. I'm speaking to you. Come out of there.
There's a good sweet doggy. How would you like to have a mutton bone? Nice fat mutton bone.
A sergeant major walks up behind Davy. The soldier knees him in the rump.
There's no accounting for the sort of things that follow a parade. Run along and frighten the civilians, my lad. Let the soldiers alone.
Lassie walks with the troops as they continue under a stone archway and through the city. The soldiers' pleated green plaid kilts and red boot tassels sway as they march on. Now, in Brown's house.
I've always said I had a loose, wagging tongue and it would cause trouble.
You've done it now, and Lassie's the one to pay.
Aye. If you both cackle, how can I get this clear?
Sorry.
Have you found anything?
Not yet.
William returns to his book.
I'd best lock the gate. It's almost time.
Aye. But Lassie will be fair frantic when the sunset bugle blows and she finds she cannot get back to the churchyard.
There'll be no sleeping in the police barracks tonight, and it serves them right.
Brown sits by the fire wrapped in a quilt. Susan opens the door and lets in a policeman.
I'm looking for the dog that was at court today.
Well, ask your sergeant. The sneaking, thieving...
That's the man sent me. We thought the dog might have run back here after she escaped.
Well, she's not here.
I'll just look about.
Have you got a watch?
Well, no.
Out of my house, then!
The dog is not here. You'd best go.
The policeman swings his billy club loosely at his side as he walks out.
Susan! Shut the door. Don't lock the gate.
If Lassie comes back and you hide her from the police, you'll all be in worse trouble.
Don't lock the gate, Susan.
At the gate, three children skip by.
I'm looking for the dog that's been living in the churchyard. Have you seen her?
What dog would that be?
None of that now. Have you seen her?
I don't know.
You don't know if you've seen a dog?
They shake their heads.
What would the police be after a dog for?
Because she has no license. And we're to put her out of the way.
A red-headed girl drops her gaze.
How much is a license?
12 shillings.
12 shillings?
Now the sergeant major enters a mess hall. Lassie sits with troops.
Hurry!
Huh? About that dog now.
With your permission, sir, we've been hoping we might keep her on as a regimental mascot.
Has she taken a fancy to garrison life?
She seems quite at home, sir.
Good. As you were.
We'd best get along to the barracks. Almost time for the bugle.
One soldier pats Lassie as the rest file out.
There, Lassie. You've no need to stand inspection yet. You stay here.
Lassie lays down next to a wooden dish. The last soldier out closes the door. Lassie jumps to her feet and runs to the door, where she scratches at its glass panes. The collie turns and leaps up onto a table near a window. She bites at the window latch, trying to open it, then paws at it. Looking around the mess hall, she sees another window that is cracked open. There, she thrusts her snout into the opening and pushes it further up with her head. Pulling herself up onto the ledge, she scrambles out through the window. Now, Lassie runs across the castle's roof. Beyond, the city's rooftops stretch to the shoreline. She peeks into an empty guard tower, then runs over to a cannon pointed out over the roof's low wall. Now, Lassie leaps onto the wall and looks down. Below, a steep, jagged cliff extends down to the ground where a green park separates the castle grounds from the city. Lassie paws at the wall as a dark blue sky looms behind her. The collie paces nervously back and forth on the wall, staring anxiously at the city below. She turns and speeds across the rooftop. Now, a sentry guard paces at the front gates. Lassie runs up and scratches frantically on the giant wooden doors. The soldier stops his paces and presents his rifle in salute to Lassie.
Hey now, let's see your pass. I couldn't open for the colonel himself without a pass.
He shoulders his weapon and resumes his stiff march. Lassie tugs at his kilt.
None of that now. Off with you.
Lassie returns to the doors and digs at the bricks below them.
You'll get no place that way. There's 500 feet of rock beneath you.
Now, soldiers search the castle grounds.
Hey, Lassie! Hey, Lass! Come away out now!
She's probably doing it at the cookhouse, big in a boat.
I've been there.
Now, don't fret yourself. There's no way out except the way she came in. Here she is.
Now where have you been?
Inspecting the post, Lassie.
To this racket now.
Lassie tugs the soldier's hand.
What's the matter, Lass? You've hardly given the army a chance.
The gate's closed till morning, so you'll have to make the best of it till then. Unless, of course, you go over the cliff in a basket.
Lassie turns and faces them. One soldier takes her by the scruff of the neck.
Lush, girl, you'll have the whole garrison up. Come on inside.
Lassie breaks free and dashes off. The soldiers chase after her.
Lassie, no!
Lassie leaps over the wall. She runs down a slab of rock, then hops down onto a grassy patch between some boulders. She comes to rest under a small bush as the soldiers scan the grounds from above. Now, outside the church gate, several children wait.
It's late for you to be up. Oh, just a few more minutes. Maybe she'll be along.
If Lassie comes back, I'll have her bark loud so you'll all know. Run along home.
The children start off, their heads hanging low. The policeman still addresses William.
I'd like to get off myself.
You may as well. If Lassie could drag herself, she'd be here. You'll find she's under the wheels of a cart.
Susan drops her gaze sadly.
Well, I'll report back to the station. Good night.
Good night.
I'd best lock up now.
Susan turns toward the gate. She wears a yellow plaid shawl draped over her faded blue dress. William approaches her from behind and she turns to him. Susan runs to William's arms. Back on the cliff, Lassie licks a wounded paw as she sits in the brush. She gets to her feet and limps from her hiding spot, then follows a grassy patch back to the edge of the cliffside. She slides carefully down a jagged boulder to another ledge. Continuing along the rocks, she searches for a pathway down. Tufts of yellow grass and green moss sprout up through the cracks in the rocky terrain. Lassie vaults to another rocky ledge. Cautiously, she hops down and slides a few feet down into a patch of moss and weeds. The collie eyes the rocky descent, then crouches down and tests her footing on a steep overhang. She prepares to spring down to the next level. Launching out onto the smooth rock face, Lassie slides down the slick surface, then regains her footing and continues down onto a flat-topped boulder. She keeps her balance as she bounds from rock to rock, moving further down the steep cliff. Nearing another ledge, she edges down past a large bush and onto a jumble of large, jagged boulders. Lassie pauses on one of the massive rocks, then inches down carefully, sliding in the loose red earth. She jumps on the side of another boulder, then up onto the flat top of a third. Moonlight gleams on the steep rock face. Now she leaps onto a slab of rock and slides down into a patch of thick brush. She knocks over a leafy branch, skids down the smooth rock, speeding quickly down to a narrow ledge. Staring down at a 20-foot drop, Lassie stands hesitantly on the edge of the ledge. She jumps, landing safely in a soft grassy mound. Morning. Now in town, Lassie pads slowly down the sidewalk, her coat matted with grass and mud. A stripe of dirt is arched across her snout. A boy runs from a shop.
Here's Lassie! Here's Lassie!
At the churchyard.
Susan!
Lassie sits outside. Mr. Brown hurries out and unlocks the gate. Susan follows.
Here, run up and tell John Trail.
Give it a bath and some milk to drink and a good long sleep.
Children and townspeople crowd around as Susan pets Lassie. Sergeant Davy strolls up.
Well, Lassie's back.
May we fix her up before you take her?
The dog comes with me. She's in police custody.
Sergeant, I think you're overdoing your official tasks.
With all due respect, Dominie, I answer for my conduct to the city of Edinburgh. Come along, you beast.
You'll not touch the dog till I give you leave.
Well, no, I mean the dog's run away once.
You'll not take her now. She'll be in court. You have my word. Come along.
The minister and the Browns take Lassie inside. As the crowd disperses, a few children lag behind. They back away from Sergeant Davy as he glares at them. Later, in Lord Provost's courtroom.
I've nothing more to say, and I thank you for hearing me out.
You have all the facts now, and it's for you to decide whether Lassie lives or dies.
Lassie looks up to the bench. Lord Provost glances over at the bald judge.
We here cannot ignore the laws of the city of Edinburgh as easily as Dr. Lee evades the rules of Grey Friars Churchyard.
He'd have a happy conscience if you could.
Unfortunately, judges do not write the laws, they merely execute them. Let it be said to our shame that the great city of Edinburgh could no better reward Lassie's virtues than by decreeing her death. It is the decision of the borough court, after all evidence heard and sitting in full session.
Hurry, Lassie, not yet, hurry!
Dozens of children come streaming into the courtroom. They rush up to the provost's bench. Two officers try to hold them back.
Just a minute, officer. Just a minute. Well, now, children, what's the meaning of this?
We've come about Lassie. We have the 12 shillings for the license.
A young boy dumps a hatful of coins onto the desk. Lord Provost stands.
And where did all that come from?
From all of us who live around the churchyard.
From Harriet's school, too, sir.
He turns to Sir Charles.
If this were before you on the Queen's bench, could you find a good answer to it?
Oh, I'd be trapped as you are. The law is clear, unhappily clear.
Now, children, this is the way of it. This money, well, you see, the trouble is you can't get Lassie a license with it.
It's 12 shillings.
We've counted it to the last halfpenny.
Well, now, you see, there's a law, and the law says that only the owner may get a dog a license, and Lassie has no owner, so... So the law says that in that case she has to be put to death.
What a wicked law.
Well, now, sometimes, until a law's changed, which will be too late for Lassie, sometimes the innocent must suffer with the guilty.
Why? That's a silly thing.
Now, listen to me very carefully. When the law was made, it was a good law. For the city was troubled with a great many dangerous and vicious dogs roaming about.
But Lassie's a good dog.
She harms no one.
But I've just explained the law was not made for Lassie.
Well, why can't she not have a license?
Dr. Lee, perhaps you can explain to the children.
You cannot deceive a child. All the reasoning in the world cannot make them say wrong is right. They know Lassie. They know she's good, loyal, well-behaved.
And if you'll just give her a license.
If there were any way to save Lassie, I...
Lassie bolts to the back of the courtroom. Huge gold-trimmed doors bar her way.
Order, please. Quiet down.
An officer grapples with Lassie. Lassie wrestles free and dashes back to the front of the court. She paws at a large bay window.
Order! Order!
Lassie tries to head back to the front door, but now two officers block her way. She turns and runs full speed at the window. She dives through it.
Order! Order! So that's your well-behaved animal. Precisely the kind of dangerous beast that's been plaguing the city.
But your lordship...
I've had enough, sir. Sergeant, you and your men will execute the sentence of the court. Now get along, man, for it must not be allowed to run loose.
I can save you a great deal of trouble, my Lord Provost. I can take you to Lassie.
Oh, she had these fits before. Do you know where she hides?
When the sunset bugle blows, her place is at Jock's grave. Her loyalty is to old Jock, and nothing save death will keep her from it.
A pretty speech, Mr. Trail, and one that I might have believed a few minutes ago. But now the dog's actions make me suspicious.
Will you put it to the test?
No matter where the dog is gone, it doesn't alter the decision.
If Lassie is a wild and dangerous beast, then I have committed perjury before this court. And I have a right to clear myself.
The provost looks at the other red-cloaked judges.
Very well. The court will view your evidence, if there be any.
The judges and provost rise. Now, John leads the judges through the churchyard, followed by a crowd of townspeople and children. Lassie stands in front of Jock's gravestone. John walks over to her as the others file around. Then he leads her over to the judges.
Mr. Trail, I can but apologize to you and to Lassie. For myself and my colleagues, for myself and all my colleagues, believe me when I say that the stain of Lassie's death will not soon leave our hearts. If there were any way to save the life of this gallant dog, it would be saved, but 'tis our sworn duty to follow the laws as they are written. Sergeant, you will remove Lassie and...
If your lordship please, to guard her master's grave was all that Lassie ever wished. This is where she hopes to live out her days. Must we torment the poor animal before her death? By driving her from her only place of comfort?
It is the least we can do. Let us clear the churchyard.
It's a tragic thing that a true Scot like Lassie has less happiness in her native city than an honorary citizen like myself.
Aye. The provost's eyes light up. Then he turns to the other red-cloaked judges. John stares quizzically at the men.
Come here now, children.
The children circle around him.
Now tell me, do you know what it is when we confer the freedom of the town on great folk?
Like when the queen comes and you give your keys to the Borough gates that aren't here anymore?
The gates are gone, but the key now opens the hearts of the people of Edinburgh and to all kinds of good folk. Well, now, we have here a quiet, well-behaved bit of a collie, a friend of everyone, and faithful. For the man she loved, she's gone hungry and cold. And she's not forgotten him, nor left him alone. Come here now, Lassie. By the authority in me vested as Lord Provost, I give ye the freedom of the city of Edinburgh. And a free citizen of Edinburgh needs no license.
Smiles spread across the faces of the cheering crowd. The Lord Provost leans to take Lassie's paw. Lassie blinks at him as they shake. Provost turns to the crowd.
The court is adjourned.
I thank
John
you,
firmly
lordship.
Shakes Provost's hand as two reporters push through the crowd.
Where was the spot you found, Lassie?
Is it true what the Sergeant Major said about her coming down the castle rough?
Aye. I'm afraid you'll not be let alone now, Mr. Brown.
There'll be a scandalous racket for a churchyard, and we'll get no sleep for days.
Well, now, as to that, if you'd be so kind as to station a police officer at the gate, just to answer questions and keep the crowd moving.
A police officer?
He looks at Davy.
A sound thought, Mr. Trail. I'll send one around.
Later, Davy stands at the churchyard gate.
Can you tell me about Lassie now?
We've just been inside with her. Run along.
Don't forget your orders, Davy.
Davy turns from William back to the boy.
She's well and comfortable. And the Lord provost.
Lassie sits at the gate wearing a new tan collar with a golden ring. John chuckles as Davy gives them all a confused look. The policeman looks down the street where a group of soldiers in kilts join a long line that stretches several blocks. Davy's jaw drops and he stares in amazement. Now, against a blue sky, words appear. The end. A message. All scenes involving animals in this picture were made under the supervision and with the cooperation of the American Humane Association. Cast. Edmund Gwenn as John Trail. Donald Crisp as Jock Gray. Geraldine Brooks as Susan Brown. Reginald Owen as Sergeant Davy. Alan Webb as James Brown. Ross Webb as William Trail. Henry Stevenson as Sir Charles Loring. Alan Napier as Lord Provost. Arthur Shields as Dr. Lee. Lumsden Hare as McFarland. Charles Irwin as Sergeant Major. And Lassie as herself.